Yeah, baby. It's episode 125 of Ask the Inspector, the very first episode of 2024, brand new year. Jeff Norman, as usual, in Wilmington, North Carolina, and Scott Ritter, our favorite weapons inspector, coming to us from Moscow, Russia at 11 p.m., is it, Scott?
11 p.m., yep.
It's almost your bedtime.
Past my bedtime.
Well, thanks for doing this. And everybody is very anxious to hear how the trip is going so far. I've been looking at some of the photos you shared. Here you are with your daughter, Patty. And is that your host, Alexander?
Yep, that's Alexander Zirianov, my host.
And that, where are you there?
This is, I believe, it's at a restaurant in Moscow called I don't know the name of it, but
a restaurant is good enough. I couldn't quite tell if it was a hotel or someone's home.
This is the restaurant. If you look in the back, you'll see two guys over my head. They're cooking over a traditional Russian stove, a brick stove, and and there's a tool that they use to extract the bread or extract the pot from the stove. And the Russian word for that tool begins with an H. And that's the name of the restaurant, but I can't pronounce it.
Well, we have Yelena backstage. So if you want to jump in anytime, Yelena, to help Scott out with some of these Russian words, feel free. But don't worry about it too much. Just want you to feel free. And there's another shot of you and Patty. The first trip to Russia, you had your other daughter, Vika, right?
Correct. Victoria came for the first trip. Patty's joined me on this one. This is...
And Patty is your favorite, right? You prefer Patty?
Why would you say that?
I'm just fucking with you. I just wanted to see how you'd react. That's a running joke I have with my mother that I'm her favorite as opposed to my sister, but she'll never...
I love both my daughters equally. And...
That, of course, is the right answer. You got a little nervous there for a second, didn't you?
No.
I just wondered.
Watch it and go, what? Did he say something? Did he say something?
This looks like a disco or something. What is that?
No, this is at the, and the other picture too, is at the VDNK exhibition. It's a VDNK is a exhibition park that dates back to Soviet times, usually dealing with, things dealing with the economy. And what they've done now is since I believe November of this year, they put this major exhibition in that all of the different districts and the oblasts of Russia have contributed to the exhibition. And each one has a stage or their own separate exhibition booth where they, they put out, things about the economy of there, the culture, et cetera. So it's just a fascinating tour of Russia to walk through it and see all the different, districts and they're very proud of, what they're contributing to the Russian Federation as a whole. So it's an eye opener. I know that if we could guide every American through this exhibition, they would walk out, first of all, saying, I thought this place was under sanctions. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, right.
Why is this Russian economy booming the way it is? And then the other thing they'd say is Russia's a pretty cool place. I mean, it's so diverse. There's so many different regions and,
sophisticated too. I mean, it looks like they must have a coat check room because there you're all bundled up there and there you are in t-shirts.
They do have a coat check. They even tags.
Wow.
The sophistication of it. But I mean, if you take a look at the exhibit itself, the level of sophistication of the displays is fascinating. The interaction, many booths have sort of a artificial intelligence derived, graphics. We went into one where there's a movie and you're on a stage and it.
Uh-oh.
There, I'm back.
All right.
But
you won't blame that on Russia. That's typical hotel stuff.
Or we can blame it on the CIA. Yeah.
So you're giving out a coin. We've been talking about for the last couple of months or so, the coin you gave out on your previous trip. And this time you showed up with a different coin, a special New Year's coin. Now, it's always a little tricky when the expectations are high. The expectations were far exceeded on the first trip. It was just a huge hit. And now you probably walked in there with a little bit of optimism. How is it going over now with the expectations higher? People just as wowed by this coin?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the other coin was related to the book tour and the fact that this was my first time to Russia. So there was sort of a unique, quality to the experience of receiving a coin. But this is a coin that is dedicated to, two things. One is the new year. So we have on one side of the coin, a New Year's greeting. And on the other side of the coin is the Waging Peace logo. And I think everybody's excited about the concept of Russian-American, improving Russian-American relationships, the notion of, being friends with each other, the druga kind of thing, handshakes, is universally appreciated in Russia. So that alone makes it. But then the New Year's wish, New Year's is very important holiday for Russians. It's there's two big holidays in Russia. One is Dien Pobeda, Victory Day, which I had the opportunity to participate in when I was in Russia in May. And then New Year's is it's a family time. Families come together, gifts are exchanged. And for people to receive this coin during the New Year's is, it's just been very special. It's the response that I've had from people who've received it is overwhelming. So I'm glad I did it. It was a little bit of a gamble because you never know how these
things are going. Well, let's give it forward, as they say. Let's do something special for our audience and give away this different coin. This is not exactly the challenge coin that we were calling the first one. This is the New Year's coin, and it's not for sale yet, but maybe in a week or so we'll offer it to our audience for sale. But we will give a free copy to anybody who wants to enter the drawing, and if you win it, it's yours. We'll ship it to you free of charge. To enter the drawing, if you're watching on Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube, or now Twitter, well, X actually, all you have to do is type hashtag coin in the live chat. Type hashtag coin. That will enter you into the drawing, and towards the end of the show, we'll give it away. And you are the recipient of a gift too, I saw. Let me see if I can find it. There it is. Somebody gave you a very snazzy-looking bottle of vodka.
It is a very snazzy-looking bottle of vodka. I mean, I guess since you put it up there, everybody can see what it is. But it's the vodka of the presidential guard, the people who guard the president, people who guard the Kremlin. This is a special bottle of vodka from them. So pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. And have you been consuming much vodka there?
No, none.
None.
And I had a little bit of champagne on New Year's Eve, and then some cognac to celebrate Alexander Ziryanov's engagement to his fiancée Olga. And Patty and I were fortunate enough to be present when he proposed, and she, of course, said yes. And there was some.
You witnessed a proposal?
Witnessed a proposal. It was
wow.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And they're just a very happy couple right now. And so we had some cognac in honor of that. But other than that, no, I've had the occasional beer during lunch and dinner, but that's it.
All right. Because I know how when you hang out with the Russians, you suddenly change your behavior a little bit from the norm. You tend to. Oh, look at this. Now I could say this happened in Russia, but that would be fake news. This is from Washington, D.C.
Technically, it's the Russian embassy, so it is Russian soil.
Sort of.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we get to the questions? This is the lightning round. We usually do it on Tuesdays, but our schedule is highly subject to change while Scott is traveling. And we'll take Scott whenever we can get him. Every question will be answered in 3 minutes or less. We have some questions that have been submitted in advance in text form. We have voicemail, and we'll try to get some live comments up and also take a couple live phone calls. Are we sticking to an hour, or you just want to see how it goes, or what, Scott?
Well, maximum an hour, but we'll see how it goes, see if the internet connection holds.
All right. The first question is from Chiba9291 in Toronto, Canada. James North's Sheer Post article says Israel is provoking the U.S. into a conflict with Iran. Do you agree, especially in light of the assassination of Iran's top commander in Syria, Razi Musan? You have 3 minutes to answer the question.
Well, in short, the answer is yes. It's not just the assassination of the Iranian commander in Syria. Israel has assassinated a Hamas commander in Beirut, which is an attack in Beirut, which is a red line for Hezbollah. The idea being to deliberately provoke Hezbollah into responding, which would promote a larger conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, and by extension drag Iran into it. And today there was a twin suicide bombing in Kerman, Iran, on the occasion of the anniversary, I think the fourth anniversary of the assassination by the United States of Qasem Soleimani, the legendary Iranian Quds Force leader. The death toll is mounting. Last I saw, it was well over 100 people. And again, Iran is blaming Israel for this. And you know, the bottom line is there will be retaliation, and the idea is see, Netanyahu right now can't get his war council to agree to attack Iran, to initiate the conflict. And plus, Israel knows that they can't take Iran on alone, that they need the United States to join. The United States just doesn't want to do it. So what Israel's doing is provoking Hamas, provoking Hezbollah, provoking Iran into carrying out an attack against Israel that would justify Israel turning to the United States and saying, we have to respond against Iran. So this clearly is a trap for the United States.
Are you finding it difficult to keep up with the news while you're traveling there, or you have enough time to check the internet and so forth?
I mean, it takes a commitment, but no, I'm reading the news every morning and then every night before I go to bed. And then if I can during the day, I'll follow it.
All right, good, because we don't want our favorite weapons inspector when he's out of the loop, only when you're in the loop. Let's move on to our next question. Iran is on the minds of a lot of folks. Sammy in Belgium, does the Iranian warship Alborz pose any significant threat to the U.S., and will this escalate things further?
I don't believe it poses a significant threat to the United States. It's a single ship. I think it's accompanied by some logistics ship. We could sink that ship in a millisecond if we wanted to. But the problem is that's escalation that we don't want. What the Iranians are doing is getting in our space, getting in our head, making operations in the region more complicated, more difficult. But Iran's not going to attack the United States. They're not going to start the fight first. They're putting that ship out there as sort of a deterrence to say, here we are. The Iranians may screen the Houthi, compelling the United States to either, ignore what the Houthi are doing or sink an Iranian ship, thereby generating the excuse for a broader war with Iran, which the United States doesn't want. And why don't we want it? Because we can't win. Sinking an Iranian ship is not a victory. Because we'll sink that ship, then Iran will destroy our bases in the region, maybe sink other American ships. That's not the fight we want. And then once it's started, how do we finish it? We don't have sufficient forces to finish the job. So it would become one of these perpetual conflicts, which we never win. I mean, yeah, we can take a submarine, the USS Florida's floating off the area, 124 cruise missiles, and we can cycle those cruise missiles through a target list. And then when we're done, that's 124 targets we hit. And so what? The Iranians have been preparing for this years. There's nothing we're going to do to the Iranians. It will take them by surprise. So, and then we're stuck with a never-ending conflict. And, you know, as history has showed, we always end up quitting because we don't have staying power. And that's the last thing we want or need at this point in time. So the Iranian ship isn't a threat in terms of it, you know, able to directly threaten Americans, but it's definitely a hindrance.
All right, we have a voicemail message from a woman who has a theory about the Netanyahu, and she wants to get your take on this theory.
Hi, Scott. I have a theory, and I'd like to know your opinion. Netanyahu is on thin ice, of course, but now he's really sunken through the ice now that judicial reform has not passed. At the same time, the IDF has publicly announced that they're taking troops out of Gaza, more than just the Golani Brigade, like substantial amount of troops. I'm wondering, I mean, of course they took the troops out because they were getting their ass kicked, but do you think it was also because the war cabinet wants to put them on the border of Lebanon and focus on the Lebanese front since they killed a major Hamas leader in Beirut, and Hezbollah has since 2006 said that if Israel ever attacks Beirut, they will attack Tel Aviv. As you've mentioned many times, Hezbollah is no joke. So it'd be pretty crazy for the Israelis to take on that bluff. But do you think because Netanyahu is now really screwed because of the judicial reform thing not passing, that this is his last Hail Mary to be sort of the dictator in power? Do you think he actually wants Hezbollah to attack Tel Aviv?
The short answer is yes, he does, because it's his only... Look, Netanyahu doesn't care about Israel. We need to be clear about that. He cares about Netanyahu. If he cared about Israel, he would have withdrawn from the political stage a long time ago. Nobody who could claim to care about Israel would have formed the government that he has formed, this far right-wing government that has dug Israel into a hole internationally. His judicial reforms, the reforms of basic law, were designed to allow his political wing to take control of the judiciary, to block any effort by the judiciary to follow through on his indictments on corruption, charges that if he went to trial and was found guilty, would put him in jail for life. He's a very corrupt man, or innocent until proven guilty. So he's been alleged to have been a very corrupt man, a very naughty boy. And right now, if he's going to be thrown out. He's one of the most unpopular prime ministers out there. The only thing that keeps him in is this war. And if he starts withdrawing troops from Gaza, that's implying that the war is moving in a different phase, one that doesn't necessitate the kind of emergency powers and emergency governance that Netanyahu has assumed since October 7th. So he needs a new war, an expanded war, and that war will be with Hezbollah and then hopefully with Iran if the United States can be brought in. So this is what he's hoping. He's hoping that he can redeem himself through fire, redeem himself through conflict, through war. And he's looking for a broader conflict. I'm hoping that his war cabinet will tell him no, because the reality is, if you think that the Hamas whipped up on the IDF in Gaza, you ain't seen nothing yet. If Hezbollah ever unleashes the full weight of its military capability, they will kick at Israel's ass from sundown to sunset.
All right. The next question is from Charles Whitaker in Singapore. What do you make of the reports by the Hindustan Times that Hamas is using Chinese weapons and that an Iranian drone attacked an Indian ship?
Well, I mean, a report is a report. I don't have any independent way to confirm what the Hindustan Times has reported. If they have evidence that Hamas is using Chinese weapons, why not? Hamas will acquire weapons on the global market directly or indirectly. So it's possible. There's nothing suspicious about it. China sells weapons on the global market. There are middlemen out there who sell. You know, Hamas is using American weapons. Hamas is using Russian-made weapons, North Korean-made weapons. Hamas will use whatever weapons they can get their hands on. So it doesn't, it doesn't shock me that those weapons are there. About the drone attack, something happened. There's stories that it was an Iranian drone. It makes no sense, but if there's evidence to back that up, then so be it. Put the evidence on the table. But there's literally no reason for Iran to be attacking an Indian ship in the Indian Ocean. There's no justification for it. And it just doesn't matter. Iran doesn't go out of its way to create unnecessary provocations, not at a time when they're trying to manage the escalation of the conflict between Israel and Gaza and Israel and Hezbollah. They don't need to go out and confuse things even more. But again, Hindustan Times is a newspaper. They have sources. If they're going to make that claim, maybe they should put some evidence on the table to back it up.
All right. We're getting comments from Twitter. We'll make sure we get a couple of those inserted. This is the first time, or X, I mean, this is the first time we've been able to insert them directly. That is a good thing. The next question comes from Maha. Hold on. Let me do it. Sorry about that. Mohammed Saleh in London, how is the assassination of the Hamas leader in Beirut going to affect the war effort against the occupation forces? Sometimes you've already kind of answered these questions. That's because you don't see these questions in advance. So it's a little bit redundant, but you want to take another shot at this one?
Certainly. Look, one of the big things that was happening that could lead to potential de-escalation was that Hamas had been talking with the Qataris and the Egyptians about the release of hostages and about bringing humanitarian goods in. And what the assassination has done is that Hamas has stopped talking with everybody. They've just pulled back and said there is no talk going on right now. That means that the Israeli hostages that are in Gaza will continue to suffer, continue to be prisoner. It also means that there won't be a ceasefire, that the going. This is what Israel wanted. See, Israel was looking at progress being made. Hamas was being reasonable. Hamas was saying, we're willing to do this. And the guy they killed was actually somebody that the Egyptians don't have high regard for the mainstream Hamas leadership. But the guy they killed in Beirut, the Egyptians could talk to. They were talking through Hamas, talking to Hamas through him, through his offices. This was a guy that was held in high regard. He would meet with the King of Jordan. He would meet with other Arab leaders. This was the kind of guy that if you want to deal with Hamas, you want to be in Hamas. This is why Israel killed him, because they don't want people dealing with Hamas. So it's shut down lines of communication. There's no talk going on right now. And what it's done is it's guaranteed an extension of the conflict, which gives Israel continued carte blanche to slaughter Palestinian civilians.
Here's a voicemail message from a gentleman named Hazir.
Hello, Scott. Hope you're doing well. This question comes from a Kurd from Iran regarding the reshaping of the world order within the next 25 years. Given the waning power of the United States due to its relentless overstretch and hegemony, are we going to witness a new superpower seizing the throne from the United States, namely China, within the next 25 years? Or is it going to be check and balance between the superpowers, like China in cahoot with Russia and EU with the United States, sort of like a Cold War, and we people in this region falling victim as pawns on a chessboard?
Well, it's a good question. I think the answer is in the intent of, because the United States is clearly on the decline. First of all, guys, when I say it's on the decline, that doesn't mean that we've collapsed tomorrow. We're still a superpower. We're still one of the greatest powers in the world today, but we are seeing the limits of this power. And we're also realizing that many of the things that combine together to make America the power that it is, our economy, our military, our political system are suffering, going through difficulties. And so, you know, collectively, they represent, you know, a weakening America. And then the vacuum that's created, it's being filled by others. You know, look, if China wanted to be a global superpower like the United States, then it could probably position itself to fill that down the road. Fortunately, China has no desire to become the new America. Neither does Russia. Both China and Russia instead are looking for a multipolar world. This is where institutions like the Shanghai Cooperation Organization or BRICS become very important. You know, it's very difficult to speak of Iran or Saudi Arabia or Egypt becoming pawns in a new superpower race when they have joined BRICS. And Russia and China will be expanding BRICS to bring in even more pawns, potential pawns. Why? Because Russia doesn't want to play that game. China doesn't want to play that game. They want to deal with a multipolar world that is a law-based international order, not a rules-based international order. And that's the direction that we're drifting to right now. And so I'm rather optimistic that in the next 25 years, you're going to see nations like Iran, nations like Saudi Arabia, nations like Egypt, able to project themselves onto the...
And the
international stage in a manner that reflects their sovereignty, meaning that they will do what they want to do, as opposed to being pawns of, you know, a larger game being played by you know, global superpowers.
All right, let's take a question coming in live on Twitter or on X. I mean, I got to get in the habit of saying X. Sophoros on X, did the U.S. know about the domestic Iran attack? Because a day or two, they pulled back the aircraft carrier in the Mediterranean, maybe to prevent any missile attack.
Yeah, I mean, look, the aircraft carrier that was pulled back was the USS Gerald Ford that was in the Mediterranean. I believe that Dwight D. Eisenhower is still operating in the Red Sea region, although it's been pulled back away from the Yemeni coast. And I think the third carrier, which is operating in the Pacific, in the vicinity of Singapore, it might be the Carl Vinson, I don't know, you know, hasn't been brought into the region. But the Dwight D. Eisenhower was in the Persian Gulf a couple of weeks ago, and they pulled that out because they realized how vulnerable it was to Iranian attack if there was this escalation. So they got it the hell out of the Persian Gulf, because if things went south real quick, that's a major asset that would be lost. It's late and I'm tired. Could you throw that question up one more time? Because my brain drifted.
Sure. Now we have another internet freeze, I think. First a brain freeze, then an internet freeze.
There.
Move around or something.
But you know, I can't sit here and say that I have evidence that the United States knew about this. What I can say, I'm moving. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Can you hear me, Jeff? No?
Yeah, I can hear you. We hear you.
Okay.
I don't know.
So I'll continue. Put the 3-minute timer. Give me some time on that 3-minute timer.
All right.
Okay. But the you know, the CIA is very knowledgeable of the players in the region, and they have connectivity with the I can hear you. The usual suspects. And I believe that the CIA had a heads up that something was going to happen, and that may have been why they pulled the naval ships back.
Okay. Can you hear me? We hear you, Scott. Kal in Denmark, since 2014, civilian areas in the Donbas have been shelled from the Ukrainian side of the front. But even 2 years into the war, it continues. Why has it been so difficult for the Russian troops to stop it? Because they know exactly from
the shots. Am I going to read it, or are you going to read it?
I read it. Go. I don't think Scott can hear me. Go, Scott.
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Well, I read the question. I don't think you can hear me fine. We are having severe challenges here due to Scott's internet connection. This happens a lot in even U.S. hotels. I think it's partially based on how many guests in the hotel are using the Wi-Fi at the same time. Well, let's give this a little more time. If we may have to just end this a little earlier than usual if we can't get this to work.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. I can hear you, but I don't see you. Let's see if he logs back in. I don't know if you folks saw Scott on Judge Knapp's show, Judging Freedom. I think it was yesterday. They went into a very professional studio in Moscow to do it. But that was during the day. So it's not so easy when it's 11 o'clock at night Moscow time. Scott is coming back in now. There he is. All right, the old reboot solution. Can you hear me? Hello, Scott. It does not seem that you can hear me. All right. Well, I guess
we're going to have to... coming in very broken. I don't know if...
All right. Well,
I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yep. What is your impression of the Jordanian army, and why does it seem it is doing nothing in regards to the Israeli conflict? Well, I don't think that's the look of Scott thinking. I think that's the look of Scott not hearing. Well, I'm not quite sure how much more to give this a try. This is...
Can't hear anything.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to have to end it early. Scott needs to sleep anyway. He's going to be talking to us from time to time while he's in Russia. And hopefully the next time around, there'll be a better internet connection. So check out all our channels for news on the next stream. And hopefully that will work out better. So until the next time, take care, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We apologize. It's the best we could do under the circumstances, though.